Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
One more time, give us a pit look.
God. This is, oh my, it's gotten worse.
Hi, welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this is the week of Robbie Couch on the podcast, a published author, gem of a human, very sweet, very handsome, and do not worry, the tease is correct. We talk about armpits in this episode and some good talk about the pits. If you are a pit girl, on the pit crew, if you will, this one's for you. Before we get into it, though, I want to tell you a cuckoo story from this weekend. I was all over the gay map, including a stay at Miss Akbar, the gorgeous gay bar in Silver Lake. And I was with my friend Corey, whose bulge you might recognize from the Gay Ass Podcast Instagram, sporting the gorgeous character actress sweatshirt, which so many of you have bought, and it makes my fucking day. But I literally was dancing, minding my own, where I saw this girl go up to Corey and say, "I love your sweatshirt. Where is it from?" I thought I liked watching porn. Oh no, bipes. I love watching girlies check out the gay ass merchies. He literally did a spin, showed her the handle on the back, and the rest is herstory. So it's happening, y'all. The merch is taking over, and you can go to gayasspodcast.com to get one for yourself. There's character actress sweatshirts. There's also people who made you gay. And I did just add the gay ass character actress hat to the website. So go off, do your thing. I also want to give a shout out to the end of this episode where Robbie and I discuss a movie that does not get its due, has been long forgotten, but I'm here to bring it back. It's The Pagemaster. Do you remember with Macaulay Culkin? Of course, Whoopi Goldberg is a voice of one of the books in it. When are we having our watch party? I hope you get to the end of the episode to dive back into that memory because it is, dare I say, one of the best movies of all time. So let's get into this week's episode with Robbie Couch. Make sure you follow along at Gay Ass Podcast. Go to gayasspodcast.com if you want some merch of your own. And if you do get some in the mail, show me on Instagram. The underwear bulge pic is not required. I swear to God, it's happening now. But if you want to just give me a gorgeous snap, you know I love that too. Enjoy this episode. Keep being you. And happy Virgo season, you nasties. I'm so thrilled to see you, but I'm devastated because I stubbed my toe all of 4 minutes ago and it made me feel like I wanted to DIY, to D-I-E, to D-Y-E, to die.
Okay, I was not following that for a second. I was like, DIY what? Wait, are you okay? Are you like bleeding? Do I need to call the ambulance for you or something?
I'm not bleeding. I'm just in emotional distress. But thank you for asking and taking it seriously. And that's a validation that I like to get. All this to say, I'm happy that you are on this podcast and it makes my stub toe feel like a world away. And thank you for coming on the Gay Ass Podcast.
Yay! I am so happy to be here. And if it helps your toe heal any faster, then it's worth it. Worth it to be here.
I think it will. Do you have a toe fetish? First question.
That was the first question that I expected. I wouldn't say toe fetish. But I feel like with feet, I used to be like, in my less kink-friendly days, I was that person to be like, ew, you're into feet? And now I'm in my 30s. I'm like, whatever floats your boat, you can lick it, slap it, touch it, go
bop
for it.
Yeah. Right. I think what we're probably aligned with is that feet are feet and feet are beautiful and we don't shame a foot. And if someone wants to lick a foot, get their foot licked, as long as say you haven't walked on... I mean, I don't know at this point.
Fire ants, glass.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to get that out of the way in terms of the foot discussion. I'm just going to check that off the list.
Right.
Robbie, congratulations on being a gosh darn star. Congratulations on having a new apartment. Congratulations on the book that's coming out. How's the new place looking?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's still it's a hot mess. It's a shit show. My stuff is everywhere. I did paint this. Can you see this wall? Yeah. I have a new orange wall that I'm feeling good about.
She's it's like gorgeous.
It's like a Southwest terracotta vibe. I think I'm going for. So I feel good about that. But I am someone who's I've learned this about myself, very susceptible to my environment in terms of like productivity and my mental health. And so to be living out of a suitcase, and I've just been traveling a lot. Like I was just in Chicago and Michigan, and then I got back to LA and then had to move. So I've just been like basically living out of a backpack for a while now. And I'm just like ready to be settled. So
emotionally, yeah. You've been kind of a wreck recently.
Right. I have been pretty devastated. Yes.
The honesty is really beautiful because I'm the same way about my surroundings. I think that's why I didn't like sleepovers growing up. True. Like I had a tough time at sleep. And you know what like compounded it is that I have a twin brother who was great at sleepovers. He fell asleep on the drop of a dime. And I was the one sitting with my thoughts until 2 a.m. thinking I'm not getting enough sleep. I miss my mom. But were you a sleepover girl?
That's the thing. I was, so now that you mention it, with my closest friends, I had like 2 to 3 like besties that I could do sleepovers with. But beyond that, I would get really nervous. I would have a lot of social anxiety. And I also was like a late bedwetter. I'm just remembering this now. And that put me on edge because I was like, shit, am I going to like piss all over this person's couch tonight?
Wait, what does late mean?
I don't know if we want to go there. 17, 18, no. no, but it, I think it, like, I was potty trained, but it was the sort of thing where it would, like, happen really randomly, like, every so often, and so it was sort of this unpredictable thing where it's like, shit, is tonight going to be the night where it happens?
Yeah. Would it be dream-based, or was it just very, like, random that you were afflicted by the pee witch?
I think it was the pee witch. I don't think it was dream based. I think it was just whenever the universe was like, let's destroy this kid's life. Ugh. I would wake up in a puddle of urine. So yeah, right.
Where's the Salem pee witch trials when you need them? Jesus, get her out of here.
I know.
You know, so. I'm glad you said that because now I feel safe in a safe space to tell you that I was mortified in high school. Or maybe even early college to like come home from winter break and then like the wet dream witch got to me. And I never had them until all of a sudden, like one short period of my life where it was an affliction and it was dream based. I will tell you that much.
Wow. Okay. That's the thing. I've never had one. I don't know. I don't know if that's normal, if I'm in like the 1%, but I've never, not that I remember or can recall.
We're protesting against a different 1% now. It's the 1% who's never had wet dreams. I think actually you should feel happy about it. It is a thrill the first 1 or 2 times to be like, oh my God, what is my body capable of? And also I would literally have sex dreams and then in the dream, it was getting to a level of hotness that I couldn't deal with. And then my body would respond in kind. And then that's the only fun part of it. And then you wake up and you're devastated. You're like mortified. You're like, I don't deserve rights. It's really, it's not good. So if you ever get one, maybe you're a late wet dreamer.
Any day now. I'm hoping I get one. But question, is it the sort of thing though, where, cause you would think if you are ejaculating, then that would be, you know, a pretty pleasurable feeling. Would the orgasm wake you up? Like, I don't know how I would just be
That's
able to, like,
a really
my
good
underwear
question.
And then like, be asleep for 4 more hours. Like, I feel like that would wake me up. But I don't know.
No. You are correct. You do get woken quite soon after the dream itself. The wetting, and that's what happens. I think it's like you feel good probably right when it's happening. Or for me, I think I would wake up as it was happening and be like, no. You know, it's like when you try to put water back in a, what's that saying? That's
put
like
water back in a jug. I don't know. I'm terrible with phrases. Yeah. Putting water back or yeah. I know what you're talking about. Putting, the thing back in the thing. And it's
this
really
is the worst part of a podcast because people listening now know what the thing is and they're the ones screaming in their fucking cars. It's putting blank in a blank, and that's what it feels like when you're having your wet dream, because you're just like fuck, and then so like the good feeling quickly turns like as we've all, and I genuinely wasn't wanting this episode to be fully filthy, but I'm naturally going on this day. But it's like the thing called post nut clarity, where you sometimes if you feel a certain type of way after the nut itself, then you, some people, whether it's religiously based, culturally based, familially, they might feel guilt or shame or whatever the fuck it is. And I feel like with my WDs, I was very much, I'm gonna say, ashamed. I think that's what I felt in the moment. I think if I had one now, I'd be like, fuck yeah, my sheets are drenched. But I think at the time, I was not like, you know, fully embracing who I was and what I was at that time.
Oh, for sure. Especially if, would they always be boys / men in the dreams? Or would it be also like, wow, that just happened with this person. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that means. Or maybe I do know what it means, but that's still scary.
Yeah, especially because I was either at the time pre-out or very, I mean, it was probably pre-out and newly out, so my hormones were just raging. I feel like we don't talk about enough, like, what happens not only emotionally, but also physically when you come out, because you're like, you're going through a second puberty, kind of.
That's very true. Especially, there's like a lot of comparisons of like, because gay people aren't really, well, I shouldn't paint with too broad a brush, but we're not, oftentimes we're kind of starved of our like normal teen years. Yes, so like we have them in our 20s or 30s or 40, whatever. And so, yeah, I feel like for a lot of gay people, myself included, you have like periods later in life where you're just like, the hormone monsters kick in and you're kind of a raging crazy person for a bit. And you're like, is this normal to be this person as a 27-year-old or whatever. Yeah.
No, that is so on top of it. And I do want to do a quick reference to something that was so fucking beautiful that you tweeted about your parents who started like a young adult queer novel library at their tiny little church. Are you joking?
I know.
Can you tell me, just because I'm curious, where did you grow up?
They're the best. They're the sweetest. So their church now is in West Michigan, in a little beach town right on Lake Michigan, a couple hours outside of Chicago. I know, it's pretty great. It's pretty great to visit them because it's like...
Did you grow up in this small beach town?
No. So I grew up... I know the listeners can't see this, but I'm going to be that Michigan person to raise their hand and point to their hand. Yeah. So in this area, like an hour and a half north of Detroit, outside of Flint area, like the southeast side of the state. Wow. And it was great. Small town Michigan, Rust Belt, yay. Terrible in some ways, great in other ways.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like it must have been a lot of things. But listen, I'm also a Midwesterner, so I'm with you.
Yeah. And then they moved to the west side of the state. And it's been so cool. So they go to like a little progressive church. I don't even know what denomination or affiliation it has. But there's a bunch of queer people in the church. They're very accepting. And they partnered with the local GSA to start a little library. And even just this morning, so I tweeted a few things throughout the past couple of months being like, hey, if anyone wants to, like a lot of authors follow me and vice versa. So I just tweeted out like, hey, if anyone wants to donate their books, that'd be so great. And just today, a few more people donated. So I think before we know, we're going to have like a legit library. A queer YA library in this
little
church.
Where is the HBO Max documentary about this tiny queer library in a tiny beachside Michigan town? It makes me feel so happy to know that there are communities like that, because it's healing as someone who did not know any queer people really growing up in my Midwestern era. To like hear things like a tiny progressive church in Michigan is like soothing for the soul.
Well, not to be Debbie Downer, but the reason why it was sparked was because we've seen these like right-wing book bans and like these, like they're like doing the whole thing where the parents are pissed off about like a gay book and it's like that sort of situation. And so this idea kind of came to be from the fact that there's been kind of this crackdown on queer stories, especially for like queer stories that have like BIPOC authors or like especially like trans authors. So it's so wonderful that people like my parents exist and are doing cool things. But it does suck that it's out of necessity, because there's not, we're now seeing kind of the pushback to that progress in places like Western Michigan. So
that is not what I saw on the bingo card, was like all of a sudden the groom talk to come in. It is so fucking frustrating. And I think like there's only so much that can be said about just like, wow, it fucking sucks. And thank God for your parents, and thank God for those of us and many of us who are living as out loud as we can, because I do, like, the optimist in me, the survivalist that needs to be able to like see another day, is just needs to know that this is a temporary phase that we're gonna prevail over.
Right. I fucking hope so. And it's also like, yes, I'm offended as a queer person. I'm also offended as someone who likes to think of themselves as somewhat creative. It's the same arguments, like this groomer shit that we heard in the 70s and 80s with like the AIDS up. It's like, can you think of like another way to attack? Like, please, this is so boring. It's
go
so,
on, but, girl, give us nothing with your hate. It's like, exactly. At least go to the writer's room and workshop it, and don't do the lowest hanging fruit. I truly,
like, comparing us to pedophiles, like, really?
Really?
That's like a 50-year whatever. But
it's the best you can come up with. Yeah. I do think that the Republican writer's rooms are lacking.
Yeah, they need to step it up.
Step up your pussy.
Get Ted Cruz out of there. Hire some.
Let's get a real good fucking writer, bitch. Okay, so since we are in this era of your growing up ship, I need to ask you the famous podcast question. Ravi Couch, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, Dave?
Okay, can I have two answers? Is that breaking the rule?
Ravi, you can have whatever you want.
Okay. I would say there's an answer that's like, oh, this person is responsible for like one of my earliest like horny moments where I was like, oops, something's going on here. And that person is a Sports Illustrated underwear model in the waiting room of a hair salon.
Oh my God. Wait,
you're from the Midwest. You know Meijer? It's a Michigan brand.
Of course I know
Meijer. Okay. Yeah. Meijer, it's like, to anyone listening, not from the Midwest.
M-E-I-J-E-R, right?
yeah, exactly. It's like a grocery store / like sort of a Walmart. I don't know. Yeah. It's mostly a grocery store, but they also do retail. And there was a very high end, very, very fancy salon in the Meijer that we went to one day. I think it was in fourth grade. And I was waiting for my dad to finish his haircut. And so I was just chilling in the waiting room. And, you know, they have magazines laid out. I picked up Sports Illustrated because, like, of course, I'm a boy. What are you going to do? You're going to look up Sports Illustrated. So I was, like, flipping through. And I remember getting to the underwear spread and, like, flipping past it. But then, like, kept wanting to, like, go back and stare at it. And, like, alarm bells were going off a little bit. Like, why do I want to do that? Like, that was, like, my first moment where I was, like, something's different.
Wait, do you so with the pages that you were looking at, was it was like underwear ads for male underwear, or was it like,
yeah it was just like ripped dudes in, I remember specifically, gray whitey tighties.
Gray,
and I was like, that's
what is it about
it.
Gray, what is it always about gray sweatpants or
gray
underwear
sweatpants, that gray underwear, yeah.
I honestly am thrilled that you were in fourth grade when this happened, because it really shows you about nature versus nurture. Like, this fourth grade child did not choose to obsess over the men in the Sports Illustrated in the Meijer salon.
Hell no.
That was God doing her work. And
yes.
I honestly had not remembered about magazines and waiting rooms, and they were... One might call them a trigger as you're a gay child growing up. Like, my dad owns a pharmacy and they would sell magazines. And the way I would open Cosmopolitan in the aisle, hide it in front of another magazine and look at, they would do this thing about like hometown hunks or something where they would like show hot man. There would be sex stories about how to get your man off. And I was like always wondering if one day I'd be able to put an ice cube in my man's butthole. I wish that's what they said. But
yes, Cosmo was like the earliest. That was like stage one of porn for me, I feel like, where you could just kind of read the naughty stories. And it was usually like, for me, it was usually like either my sisters or like I would be at a friend's house and it would be like, his sisters would have a bunch of Cosmos in their room and I'd be like flipping through. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Totally hear you. And then can I say my second person?
Please.
Trini, the yellow Power Ranger. And I say that because I just loved her. I adored her. And I felt like it was like one of those things where, and I also loved Kimberly. The Pink Ranger was great too, but specifically Trini, yellow Power Ranger, was one of those moments where it was like, oh, all the boys love the red Power Ranger and the white Power Ranger and the green Power Ranger. And I just felt, you know, a little bit different in like loving Trini. And I had like the stuffed, I had like a stuffed yellow Power Ranger. My parents made like one of those like kids books where you could put your, like your kid's name in the book. So it was like, I know. Yeah. It was like personalized for me. I felt this very great bond with Trini, the yellow Power Ranger. And I was like, yeah, I'm a homo. So yeah.
You are a homo. And you also chose the, I think the Power Rangers that all of us queer babies, yellow and pink were always, I think there was like controversy with, we dressed as Power Rangers for Halloween one year. And I think I wanted pink, but of course I like could not do that. Right. I'm reading up. I didn't know that her name, I had forgotten her name as the Power Ranger was Trini Kwan.
Yeah, that was like the character name.
That was
the
character, and then but the actor.
She passed away.
She passed away.
Yeah, I know.
Wait, 8 days before 9/11. What does that mean?
I don't think it was related. I don't think it was related. I don't think it was either,
Robbie. Oh my God.
So I've tweeted about my yellow Power Ranger adoration, infatuate, whatever, a few times, and every single time I do, the replies are just people being like, she died. I'm like, I know she died,
we know,
let me just have this.
Yeah, you're like, I'm a fan, babes, I know that. Yeah. she's passed,
she's
but God
passed.
We want to thank her for her work and for her, because I this podcast is now becoming like our fallen heroes, because last 2 weeks ago we talked about Olivia Newton-John's passing, and I feel like Olivia.
Right. Oh, I listened. Yes. Jackson's episode.
Jackson, listening.
I know.
Oh, Robbie, what a good guy you are. But yeah, Tui Trang, we give a moment for your work as the Yellow Power Ranger, and we want to thank you for causing a lot of gay men to come out to their families.
Correct. Can I also look at my fucking pit stains? Is this going to be like, this is so bad. Are you trying to turn me on? No, I'm trying. The air conditioning situation in my new apartment is not okay. So
show them again.
So yeah,
wow, they're so they look good.
Bad. Holy shit! I didn't even see. Like I was like, I bet I'm.
I didn't
sweating
see them until
bit.
You literally called them out. I truly.
Oh well, great, cool. Well now I'm so.
I
conscious.
Can't explain it to you, Robbie. I can't explain it to you, but. For whatever, I'm not into pit stains. I'm really like, let me make that clear. Even though if you are, whoever I support you, but something about armpits to me are quite erogenous.
You're a pit dude.
A little bit. I'm not like constantly like sniffing and licking in a public space. But like if I, you know what happened? I was hanging out with someone recently who I do find attractive. I will say that, and he was wearing a tank top, and either it was on purpose or he just naturally puts his hand behind his head a lot. He kept, we were just like at his house, like it was really like a low key hang, but I kept getting a glance of the pit and
yeah,
I was not disliking it.
Pit. Yeah. Is it for you? Is it a visual thing? Is it a scent thing? Is it both?
It's actually not scent. That's a good question. Okay. I think it's mostly visual. I've never, cause I do know someone who's like one time made a comment when we were out, a big old thing. He was like, oh, you showered today. I was like, sorry about that one. But yeah, it's not a scent thing. It's definitely, I think it's because visually it maybe to me like represents manliness. Maybe it represents like, ooh, it's a little forbidden for me to be attracted to something that like you are supposed to be kind of embarrassed about as a kid. I don't know what the full like sociological study of it is for me, but it is a thing. Are you, do you not, what is your pit relationship?
No, pits are great. Pits are great. I wouldn't say I have a pit fetish necessarily, but
oh,
I'm,
so you're calling mine
I'm
a fetish. You're calling me a freak. You're telling me to join a circus and run.
No. I think pits are wonderful. I will say I feel like pits are, in general, very attractive, wonderful. But for me, the scent thing is interesting because I'm a big believer in, like, the, what's the right word? Like, the pheromone matching and stuff.
Yes,
like,
yes.
I've been with guys that it's very, God, I hope my parents aren't listening to this podcast, but, or my sister, I'm sorry, y'all, but I've been with guys that it's very it's a turn on, smells wonderful. Been with guys where it's the exact opposite. So I think that's sort of interesting to like think about like on a very like hormonal level, like if you can match with someone or if there's any like science. I think there is science behind that. I don't know, but
I'm sure at some point historically there's been a pheromone study, because that is a very, that's probably a great way of putting it. Like I have never been like, please do not shower and let me bathe in your BO. I actually can't stand that smell, but
right.
The pheromones is a real thing that is smell based.
Yeah. And I think there's sort of a difference, right, between like straight up BO and like a general just like scent of your, like, because if you just like walk down the block and it's hot out, you're not necessarily like reeking of BO, but like you might get off, you might give off a little bit of like a
your sweat
sweaty
smell.
Yeah. So that's like more of the scent, I think.
Yeah.
That I would, what the hell am I even talking about? I don't know. To answer your question, pits are great.
And that's the title. I do also want to refer to you, since I was talking about hanging out with my pity friend, you tweeted something that I really identify with. Schools should teach kids more practical skills they can apply when they're adults, like how to make new friends in their 30s. Robbie, why did you tweet this?
Because I need more friends in my 30s. So I'm relatively new. Well, I don't know if I can say this anymore because I've been here for over 2 years, but
well,
I'm
still,
going to
I think
anyways.
That's still...
newer, yeah.
And the pandemic delayed it all.
Exactly. I feel like I moved to LA in the middle of, right at the beginning of COVID. The first year I was here, I was just like staring at my walls. So yeah, like I'm newer to LA. I certainly have friends here, wonderful people here, but I have those moments where it's like, damn, like I wish there was just easier ways to, and there's absolutely ways to make friends. I did the gay kickball thing for a season, shattered my back. And so I was like, maybe not doing that. That was dramatic. I didn't shatter, but I did. I was like, I'm no longer in a position to like run and dive and tackle people.
Well, you know that I did see also, as I've been a follower of yours for a long time, you've referred to your sciatica. And I want to say that you and I are sciatica sisters because I herniated a disc like at this point 10 years ago and I deal with it on the reg. So
isn't
I want to
so fun
pour one out for you and all of our lower back sisters. What did you just playing like fucking tweak her or what happened to your back? I need
to know. I think this is my hypothesis.
Yes.
Well, I hurt my back working out, doing some squats in the gym.
Hell yeah.
And then it was one of those things where like I left the gym being like, ooh, I think I tweaked it, but I'm not sure. And then I woke up the next morning like, could not move sort of thing. And my back hurt. So it was like my lower right on my right side hurt pretty bad for like a week or so. Uh-huh. Is that yours too?
It is
lower
mine.
Right? Fuck.
Let
what
me
is
guess.
Up with the
you,
lower right?
Let me guess. You played with a hurt back and then you made it worse.
Well, I mean, I've done that before. Yes. But in this specific situation, the situation that sparked the sciatica was it hurt for a week or so. And then once it started healing, then the sciatica like kicked in. I don't get bodies, but it kind of started where the actual injury was and then went through the ass, the thigh, the lower leg, down to my toes. It's
ooh,
so great.
Robbie,
so great.
That's sciatica living her full capacity. Are you a chiropractor girl?
I've gone to a chiropractor. It wasn't for me. I don't want to take an official stance on chiropractors because I've heard great things. I've heard not great things. For me, it didn't. I've gotten way more benefits from going to physical therapy.
I think that is ultimately, I want to be very responsible here because I have on the record spoken about chiropractors so many times because the videos for me are like, it's a different type of porn that I can't describe.
Oh,
I
they're
love,
so hot.
I love the hot chiropractors and I love hearing the cracks out of bodies. I can't explain, like it's, I don't know, very Adam's Family of me, but like I just do. But I've been reading more about it and apparently a lot of chiropractors really aren't doing science and they're just trying to see how many decibels of crack they can get out of your human form. So like I do think that physical therapy is a responsible thing to do. I think chiropractic has healed a lot of people, but you have to be so mindful of it. And
right.
And I don't know. I have a physical therapist friend who was like, you know, the Y strap where they put the strap around your neck and then they pull the people's head.
That looks so fucking
and then,
horrifying.
And then the people's reactions are always like, oh my God. I'm sorry, I just wasn't expecting that. And you're like, they did have Jesus like be ripped out of their asshole. Like, I've never had it done. I want it so bad that my friend and her husband were like, that is so terrible for you. But I think the jury's out. I think I'm still going to wait and see.
Wait, you want the... Okay, I get why it's satisfying to watch, but actually imagining myself in that position, like...
it's a little torture chamber-esque. It really is. It's a little Dr. Frankenstein.
Oh, and my my sister is a doctor, and she is a neurologist. And when I told her I was going to the chiropractor one time, she was like, "Are you sure you want to do that?"
Fuck,
she's actually
seen.
Yeah, she's. And again, I'm sure there are people listening that are pro chiropractors. I'm not anti chiropractor. I think they've worked great for a lot of people. But to your point, there's enough bad apples in the mix
exactly.
that if you don't know who you're going to, and like really paying attention to if they know their shit and not going too hard, then it can not be great. So
it can, and I 100% can tell you this. I, in another life, was a touring actor with a big old musical, and I was playing a role that was like, and my back had already been injured, so I had to be super careful. I went to a new chiropractor in every city, which is not the smartest thing a person could do, but I went to like a fucking butch lesbian in San Francisco who ripped me so, I mean, it was, I saw God, it was so good. But then I went to some, of course, straight man in Indiana who just like didn't, it just like did not do the trick right. And so I think there are bad apples, and I think
for sure.
that it's again, yeah, I think chiropractic at its best can be, is that the real word, Robbie?
I don't know. Every time I'm about to say it, I'm like, I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know if that's the right word.
I'm saying it with the confidence of someone that is fully a doctor.
Right. And I feel like people assume that I'm good with words because I'm a writer. Don't ask me how to pronounce anything, how to spell anything.
Frustrating as a writer of like, you know what, like if a singer says they sing, like a sing song, something, if a comedian says they're a comedian, say it, tell us
right,
a joke.
Right.
And with a writer, it's like, what does this word mean?
Yeah. And I'll misspeak or like fumble my words, and people always be like, "Ah, aren't you an author?" And I'm like,
"Kill me.
Lower your expectations. I'm not. By definition, I am, but I am not any better with words than anyone else.
Lower your expectation and lower your goddamn voice. The way you're asking me to be a thesaurus, I cannot. That is, I mean, listen, people are people, and I'm saluting your journey. I do want to ask you another podcast question, Robbie, which is something that needs to be asked, is if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
This was tough to think about. Can I also answer with two? I know that's probably breaking rules again.
You can do whatever
I'll be
you
quick.
Want.
I'll be quick.
You showed me your pits, so you can do whatever you want.
Okay. I don't know if anyone has said these people before, but Jennifer Coolidge, love her to death. Mm. I think she is so brilliant, and she plays characters who are oftentimes very like flighty or like airheaded or whatever. And so there's kind of this assumption that she's not as brilliant as she actually is, but then she does things like the fucking White Lotus and just like blows your brains out. I think she's terrific. I also, so Blaine for the Win was my second book, and it was loosely inspired by Legally Blonde. And I had to, yeah, it was really fun. Yeah, very fun to write. And Aunt Star is a character in my book that was loosely based off of Paulette, which was like the most fun character to write ever. And I had to rewatch the film a few times just to kind of like, you know, familiarize myself with it. And it's crazy because I feel like Jennifer Coolidge, her association with that film is so like, I feel like she's on par with Reese, like really in terms of like the difference that she made to the film.
Absolutely agree.
Right. But then you watch the film and she has like 10 lines. Like she is such a secondary character.
Really?
Maybe more
I haven't rewatched in a while, but I believe that she is in it less than one would remember, because think about the, you know, I'm taking a dog, dumbass, or Bend and Snap, or the UPS delivery guy. I mean, I think some of the biggest parts of the movie that we remember are Jennifer.
Exactly.
Central.
She steals every scene she's in. And just to do, I feel like to have that ability is very impressive. So she's definitely one of them. And then the second one I couldn't choose between them was Allison Janney, who
great.
I love, 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 love everything she's in. Blows my socks off. She's great in Mom, although I feel like Mom is like, I don't know, just kind of, it's a great sitcom. But
I've never seen an episode. Are you mad?
Oh, no, because I mean, Mom's okay. I'm pro Anna Faris. I think she's great too. But I am not the biggest Mom fan. But Allison is amazing in it. She's, what else has she been in? Juno. I thought she was great in that.
Mm-hmm.
She was really good. I don't know if you've seen.
I, Tanya.
Oh my God. That meme with her fucking smoking a cigarette with her oxygen tank on, saying,
"Is it her
YouTube,
like, fuck,
YouTube fuck?" That is maybe a top five favorite meme. She's amazing.
Well, I think
that.
Your answer is so brilliant because when you think about Alice and Janney, like a lot of like the mom thing, like I've seen like enough of Mom to know what her vibe is in it. And like I, Tanya, it's such a different vibe. You think about Drop Dead Gorgeous and yeah. She is like, and to me in Drop Dead Gorgeous, she is like the aunt that everybody wishes they had. She's just like, right. I mean, yeah. Her relationship with Kirsten Dunst and that is just like,
I know.
So beautiful. As silly as that movie is, that's a fucking gorgeous relationship of just like your biggest ally who's like close friends. She is just like close friends with Kirsten Dunst's mom, or are they like sisters?
Yeah, I think
she lives two trailers down. Don't believe right. her. It's just like, it's so, I love Allison Janney with all my heart.
She's the best. And she was just on like an HD TV show where they remade.
She was. I thought I was going to reference that too, where she, it yeah. was like they did the a friend her of hers home. Her
or whatever.
Home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she was just so great. Like, I just was like, God, can we be friends? Like, I want just to hang out with you. But yeah, she's so lovely.
A weird connection I just made. I feel like Allison Janney is not only so talented, but a little wackadoo in a way that I think Jamie Lee Curtis is a little wackadoo in real life.
Right,
I'm just seeing,
right,
like,
right,
I can just see that sort of wackadoo connection IRL.
Yes. No, that makes complete
sense.
Same
with, like, I feel like Joan Cusack, too. There's like these right. tall actors yeah. who play these, like, they're great actors. And I bet they're just like, kind of weird in a way that
kinda
you love.
Weird. Yeah. And like kind of don't give a fuck that they're weird. Yes. Like just like over it. And I feel like there should almost be a subgenre of character actresses that fit that specifically. Cause I know exactly what you're talking about. And mm-hmm. I don't, it's hard to characterize, but like 100% get that. Yeah.
Would you say that Parker Posey's in that same camp, or is she not as wackadoo in real life?
Oh, maybe not as wackadoo, but yeah. I'm not like, I don't know. I'm not quite up to speed with her as much as the others.
She's more wackadoo of that. She shops at crystal shops and then gives you like an amethyst. Oh my God.
Don't ask me. I'm not an amethyst.
I just reversed. She's the one that gives you like an amethyst dream catcher gift. And whereas the other ones are like going to bring a kind of bad casserole, but you're going to love it anyways. That's how I feel.
Right. Oh my God.
You're like,
absolutely.
Your net worth is what? And casserole has. What? I think we found out something there in terms of the character actress.
Yes, listeners, come up with your like best
aunt character actress aunts character.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Crazy aunt character actresses.
Right.
I do want to say that a very exciting thing for me with this podcast is that I put out merch recently, and of course, the thing that is being sold the most is the sweatshirt that says "character actress" on it. And because of the booming success of, you know, 50,000 people owning their character actress sweatshirts, I am putting out a character actress hat. I'm just gonna fucking become the character actress merch girl.
I fucking love that.
What else do you want?
Did 50,000 people actually buy it?
No, Robbie.
I'm sorry.
But one day.
I was just about to say, that's a fuck ton of shirts that you sold. I'm sorry.
That means I would have been, oh God, yeah, yeah.
You could have quit.
That's called manifestation, babe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I will buy one. I'm going to, as soon as this recording ends, I'm going to go buy my own.
There you go, everyone. Robbie Couch is going to be laid out with a character actor sweatshirt. There's also, I'm putting character actor's hat on the thing. So I just think, I don't know. I think we should be representing our mascot in any way possible. So maybe you'll get, what other type of clothing would you wear with the worst character actors on it?
God, I don't understand LA fashion in general, so I don't know what I could wear with that. I don't know what's allowed, what's not allowed. But
someone DM'd me they wanted a jock strap.
Ooh. I don't know what's hotter than, you know, hooking up with someone, they take off their pants and across their penis is character actress.
No, I'm picturing it on the back strap.
Oh, on the back strap, right?
And then
right.
they
okay.
pull
yeah,
it
yeah.
while you're doing doggy.
Yeah, character actress. Yeah, that's, speaking of kink, that's pretty kinky.
That's pretty kinky. That's character pretty actress jock. Well, stay tuned to the getgayaspodcast.com for the character actress jock. I do need to ask you something else that's, speaking of LA lifestyle, the fashion I find to be quite relaxed, but I'm very interested when I'm meeting new people now that I'm meeting more and more people that are taking social media breaks, and you took one in July, and I want to know what your takeaway was.
Yeah, I had a wedding in Chicago and I had family time in Michigan after that. So I was going to be gone for like 3 weeks or so. And I just I also had a few things in my life where it was like career stress hitting the fan, personal stuff hitting the fan, like from a mental health perspective, it was like everything in my life just kind of hit the fan at the same time.
Yeah.
So it felt like, okay, this is the perfect time to just delete the apps, get them off my home screen, just be able to focus in the moment at my friend's wedding and just be with my family in Northern Michigan and just try to detach, you know? And I will say it was tricky. I would say the first week or so was actually so hard, to the point where I was like, I think I have to just fucking download Twitter again because I'm losing my mind. And you have the social media FOMO, and like, it's just, it sounds like
withdrawals.
I feel like you kind of go through this process of like feeling left out, feeling like you're not up to speed on things. And then after that, like by the time it was, because I was telling myself like, okay, by August, I'll get back on at some point. And I think I got back on like August 3rd or 4th or something. And it was like, I did it kind of begrudgingly because I was like, I don't even know if I kind of hit that point where it felt so nice to not be online. But I do think there are very clearly benefits to social media, of course. For me, it's so cool to talk to readers and stuff. So it's like, there's very great benefits to it, but it was really nice to just be like, all right, shutting this down for a bit.
It's a very fine line between using it in a productive, positive way, and I think in a way that you find yourself mindlessly scrolling. And it's been a big topic in my household recently because I'm genuinely meeting new people that I'm becoming good friends with, one of whom is not on any social media platform. And ideally I would be off of it all. But if, again, I do really enjoy, I've met so many great people. I've like listeners of this I've messaged with that are so nice and like, and enjoy creatively putting out things that I really feel like fun to do. But on the other side, it sometimes is hard to feel as present as you want to be when you are feeling that you're maybe not posting enough, or that you are, I don't know. I don't want to feel tied to it.
Yeah, it's a mind fuck. And there's also the elements of like how much of it is performative versus your truly authentic self, which is something I've wrestled with. And like, is it okay to kind of be performative at times because it's like people know it's performative or like, I don't know. There's so many like nuances to this conversation that just, I don't know. I think we will look back 50 years from now, or maybe even like 10 years from now, and look at, I mean, we're kind of doing this already where like studies are showing the effects of social media and just like how much it can be detrimental to your health. And so I feel like we're just now scraping the surface of knowing how much this is really fucking with all of us.
That makes me tummy nervous.
Yeah. Not to like end this podcast on a bad, but that's like, I feel like we're kind of, yeah. Well,
thank you for being on. Where can people follow you? I'm kidding. Can you imagine that's the end of the podcast?
Oh, my God.
Anyways, what's your handle?
I know. So follow
everyone,
me at Robbie
Couch. Yeah. Follow, subscribe. Do not miss any of his posts. Turn on notifications to be tied to your phone at all times.
Oh, my God. Yes. Let's change the subject quick so that when we get to that point, it won't seem as hypocritical. Yeah.
There was something that it's so hard, Robbie, because the topic of finding new friends, I think, is a very real thing, especially in your 30s. And people have heard me say this, that since I moved to LA like 9 months ago, I've made a huge priority to actually say yes more and like really meet. And it's changed completely how I was acting when I lived in New York. And it is tricky, but also really freeing to like pretend to be someone that I'm not in a way that's like the better version of myself, which is like looking into the fear. And so what I'm saying is tricky about this is like, Robbie, I'm going to be inviting you to shindigs, and I would love to be IRL friends.
My heart just skipped a beat. I would love that so much. Please, this can't just be talk.
It's not talk,
like,
Robbie.
I'm a girl that
puts words into action. Also, let's let the world know that my birthday is next month. I'll be having a little hangout, and you're going to be there.
I am there 1,000,000%. I mean, I hope I don't.
And please make sure you tag me. I'm kidding. Okay, so with that being said, Robbie Couch and Eric Williams are new IRL friends brought together from That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Can you talk to us about, and I genuinely am inspired by your career, your writing. It is just, of course, the conversation we're talking about with like queer writing and queer books and culture being sort of attacked. Can you, like, for the girls that want to embark on a journey that, whether it's writing, whether it's creating, whether it's even just a different career that feels like sort of hard to break into. Can you tell us the elevator pitch of how you ended up being this amazing published author?
Yeah, I mean, thank you. My ego just got much bigger. Appreciate that. So my background had been more in like a bit more traditional media. I don't want to call myself a journalist. I wasn't a journalist, but I did work at like HuffPost. I was a writer at Upworthy. I interned at Hearst, at Oprah Magazine for a hot second. So I came from a bit more conventional media trajectory. And then I think I just got to the point, I always wanted to write a book. And I got to the point in my late 20s where I was just like, you know what? I want to fucking do this. I'm going to put my head down, come up with a premise. And early on, I actually had like a very, very early draft of The Sky Blues had a straight girl character instead of a gay boy character. And I think I just subconsciously was thinking this book is going to sell better or be more marketable and have access to mainstream commercial markets if it's a straight character. Wow. Again, didn't consciously make that choice, but I had a few conversations with people where it was like, wait, what am I doing? Like, this is my whole thing. Like, I want to tell more stories that center queer kids, queer stories, and have books and film and series that I didn't have growing up. I don't know about you. How old are you turning, by the way, next month, next week, next month? What'd you say?
Next month. How dare you ask me my age?
Is that bad? I'm pro.
It's just not bad at all. I'm okay, pro okay. as well. I also will okay. talk about money more than people are comfortable with. Just like the 55,000 shirts that I've sold. I turn 33 next month.
Oh, sweet. I'm 33.
Yay.
Okay, this is meant to be. Okay.
It's M2B.
Wait, why did I ask you that?
Because I don't know. I don't fucking know.
I got distracted. I was talking about...
No, yeah, you were talking about you wanted to center queer voices and...
Oh, right. So growing up, we didn't like... I mean, there were certainly some gay characters. There was like the Will and Grace. But not a lot. And they were also very... Like, the quality of the representation sucked oftentimes. And so, yeah, I just kind of was like, let's start to rework this. And I'm by no means like the trailblazer. There was certainly like queer authors that came before me, many years before me, that have been doing this work for a while. Mm-hmm. But I do think I'm a part of like... the first kind of big wave of queer authors writing queer YA. And that's really cool to see it kind of enter this commercial market in a way where you can walk into a Barnes & Noble and see like a pride display in the YA section. That's just like, who could have thought that would be a thing 20 years ago? So,
oh, fuck yeah. I think it's magical. Sweet.
Did I answer your question? I'm sorry. What was
I mean, you basically were working HuffPo, all these other things, and then you buckled down. And what I think you did that I'm really trying to do with This One Life is that if you want to do something, you literally Nike just do it, and then you see what happens from the doing of. And I will say that the part that I don't know about your story that I'm interested in is that you buckle down. You're like, no, I'm not going to make it this straight girl hero character. I'm going to make it this gay boy. How did you, was it like you, okay, I've got a draft or I've got a pitch. And then did you like blast her or did you like use the connection? Like, how did you get from point A to point B?
So I kind of went the more conventional traditional route where I wrote the manuscript. I very much advise people to have other people read it, whether they're like other writers or even just your friends or your, like, just have eyeballs on it. I was terrified to do that because I was like, this is such a mess. This is so shitty. I'm scared. It's so weird because I came from a more general, like, media background where like a million people could read an article I wrote for HuffPost and I wouldn't bat an eye. Mm-hmm. But this was just so much more personal to me. I was so scared to let anyone read it. So I just started pitching agents and got a literary agent, shout out to Mo at Bookends Literary, in 2019. And then Simon & Schuster bought it in late 2019. I don't even, the time, what is time? But I kind of went the conventional route of agent,
Robbie,
publisher.
It's so good. It's so inspiring because you know what you did is you just fucking took the bull by the gay bull by the rainbow horns and you rode her to literary heaven. And here you are to tell the tale. And it turns out many tales. And one of those tales is your book, If I See You Again Tomorrow, which is coming out in April of next year. So everyone needs to pre-order that fucking book because
please,
truly, I'm not just saying this. I'm very, very inspired. And I might have some... book stuff to come out of my own that I'm going to be asking you about when we finish recording.
That's a little
teaser there. Robbie, yay. I unfortunately have to end this episode, even though I want to continue to kiki, but we'll do it IRL. Yes. Before we end this episode, one question I have for you that I did not prep you on, Robbie Couch, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Ooh. I would probably say the best Whoopi Goldberg film. Oh my God. Well, I loved Rat Race. I loved her in Rat Race. Do you know that? Did you watch Rat Race?
I have watched Rat Race, and this is why you are iconic.
I want to say Sister Act. I could say Ghost, but...
There's a very specific person that says Rat Race on this podcast, and I'm a huge fan of that specific type of person, and I do think it's good. I do need to absolutely reference something that someone messaged me on the Gay Ass Podcast Instagram is, did you ever see, especially as a writer, did you ever watch The Pagemaster when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah.
The Pagemaster is not only such a good movie, but Whoopi Goldberg voices like a horny book in it. And
I don't think I knew that or remember. You probably didn't know or didn't remember,
and I'm not kidding. I want to have like a group viewing Pagemaster sesh. It really was one of my favorite movies as a kid, and I haven't watched it since I was a kid, and Lord knows how I'll get my hands on it, but I think it's a whoopee film that does not get discussed enough.
Did you say she voiced a horny book?
Horny book, I did.
Okay, well, now let's do a viewing party, because I need to see that.
And then everybody dresses as their favorite horny book.
My God, I love that. Yeah, that was such a good, and wasn't like the, I remember just being like the library was gorgeous.
Insane. And it's Macaulay Culkin as kid that then becomes a cartoon. Yeah. It is such a moment.
Such a classic. Am I just sweating so bad?
You look great. Okay, you look great.
All right, I'll stop talking about my sweat.
One more time, give us a pit look.
God. It's gotten worse.
It looks great. It looks great. I'm a huge fan. Robbie, where can people follow you?
At Robbie Couch on everything, I think, except I think there's a little underscore thingy majig between my name on Twitter. But hopefully that shouldn't throw you off.
It won't throw them off. And if anybody here needs to take a social media break, you are supported in that. And when you're back on, follow Robbie whenever you feel that you want to connect. And because Robbie, I can say this as a follower of yours, is a great follow. So Robbie, thank you for coming on the Gay Ass Podcast, and I'll see you soon.
Oh my God. Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals, only at Smoothie King.